This fire engineering podcast is made possible by Tenkata Protective Fabrics. The global leader in flame-resistant fabrics, Tenkata Protective Fabrics enables millions of people worldwide to be great at what they do. Generations of industry professionals serving in the fire service, industrial, and military industries rely on Tenkata Fabrics for safety, comfort, and confidence. From the harshest working conditions to the welcoming site of home, Tenkata recognizes the people they're protecting are unique individuals whose lives extend beyond work. Supporting a world of evolving needs, Tenkata's innovations lead the way in user-centric design, technology, and sustainability around the globe. To learn more, please visit TenkataFabrics.com.
Welcome to Tailboard Talk with Dane Carley, Craig Nelson, and Jeff Wallen. Every month we explore different topics of interest to you, our cohorts in fire and emergency services. So whether you sit back and listen, sound off on the message board, or call in live to be part of the conversation, we welcome you to join us in our mission to improve the fire service for those we serve and those we serve beside. Now coming to you live from the Great White North, this is Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.
Hey, welcome to Tailboard Talk for Friday, March 11th. I'm Jeff.
I'm Craig. And Chris.
I waited till I saw something go. Yep, got a little snack there almost, in the mouth. At perfect timing.
Almost choked on that beef stick.
My fault, I didn't know.
It's okay.
Consequently, you'll be looking for a new co-host next month.
A little butcher block is always good.
Glad I'm surrounded by medical professionals.
Yep. Oh, a lot of
with
light.
No skills anymore.
Yeah. Oh yes, they're pretty rusty behind that desk.
Just enjoying the results of the new butcher store in town called the Butcher Block. A little meat and cheese tray.
Meat and cheese tray. Yeah, yeah, it's always enjoyable.
Kind of neat how you see something cycle in and out of society. So, you know, 15 years ago, 20 years ago, you said, boy, these nice old-fashioned meat markets, you'll never see these things again. Right. They're a dying breed. You know, everybody's buying things at the big boxes, the chains in your grocery stores and so forth. And at least in our area, a flourishing of activity in designer stores and things like this. And it's not high-end. It's just, it's a butcher shop.
Specialized.
They specialize in crap that
are good quality, right? Yep. Instead of the pre-processed where every grocery store in town gets their same crap from the same place that puts too much garlic in the thing they think that makes it taste good. And it's like, no, these guys are doing wild rice blueberries brats combinations of things that are super awesome. And people are just gobbling it up because the standard crap that you get at every store just ain't cutting it. And it's sweet to see these things surviving and popping up and people actually buying food and enjoying it from there. I like it.
One of the
mom and pop stores are coming back. Maybe
they are a little bit. Yeah.
One of the guys we work with was talking about. He swung in there and he's like, "It just smells so good in there."
Yeah.
We were kind of joking because his wife was next door at the thrift, the whatever store, looking for artsy stuff, and and so he wandered into the butcher block and he was kind of saying, "You know, if only they had a few chairs in there, you could just sit down and just." Smell. I'm just here to smell for a little while. I might buy something before I go, but
well, you know, buy a little sausage, a block of cheese, and a box of crackers, and sit down at the table over there and just start going to town. Yeah. You know, it's like the coffee stores in Barnes and Noble.
Yeah.
You know, you got to think, get a crowd together, and just partake.
It's kind of nice. It's you don't walk into the big box stores and feel rushed. And I buy a T-shirt and my supper and some motor oil. This one, you walk into a little store, it's nice, it's specialized, and maybe it slows you down, de-stresses you a little bit.
They have a short conversation. If you've been in a couple times, they get to know your face, and they ask you some questions about you and who you are. And perhaps if you're a veteran or public safety or a couple other areas, we got a special program for you folks. We like you guys coming in. All right, we got this thing on the side. You didn't know about the 10% for public safety, right?
I did not know that. I will bring it up.
And you don't have to be in uniform. You just have to tell them it's an on your honor thing. And I happened to walk in uniform to buy before one of these shows. And they said, and tell all the folks you work with, too. And you don't have to have a uniform or a badge or nothing. Just let us know.
Yeah, more people should do that.
Yeah.
No, tell you that.
It's a great idea. Only way you can make it better is go to 15.
Yeah, we'll fire it up and wreck it. What, 25 is not good?
Two for one Tuesdays? Well, uh-huh. Anyone?
It's kind of the firefighter way is we find a good thing and we wreck it. We're going to take it to the next
10%,
step.
10%, that's all you think about me?
Yep.
Can my mom and dad get that too? How about my neighbor?
Yep.
Yeah. Well, we're in between seasons, maybe.
Maybe. Ask us in another week, and it'll actually feel that way.
As I wrecked my snowblower today, so
no,
still involved in that, trying to figure that out.
It's not just the shear pin, eh?
No, I don't know yet. I just parked it.
Okay. It quit, and then you stopped in frustration.
Did you kick it?
Yeah, future Chris's problem.
I hope and assume you kicked it at least once or twice.
If things go right, you may be able to put off that repair until fall.
Yeah, huh? That's what I was kind of planning on, looking at it when it's 70 out, maybe. But
we're
the night before the snow occurs in October.
Or during the next blizzard. I don't know.
We're March 11th, and we're looking at below zero temperatures.
Yeah.
That's not fun.
Lovely.
Neighbor called last week. He was plowing his driveway, and he got stuck in his driveway. I had to go pull him off.
That's a rite of passage.
It should not be a problem in March.
No.
Oh, hey, the last time we did the show, after we were done, we were talking about the snow and the crazy drifting that had been going on about a week before the show, and you had all these little finger and pillow drifts going on out there. I hit that one down by the end of the paved road coming in. That one big one that's, for some reason, is just this huge chunk of ice now all the way across the road. Holy crap, I've never seen anything like that. That is just embedded ice on the road.
I swore I heard a Yahoo. I wasn't sure.
It was similar to the Dukes of Hazzard.
Yeah, I was
going to
get that
horn
installed there in the old truck. Get her going. Hey, y'all, watch this.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about tonight, Jeff?
Well, that's all I had on my mind. You guys good? No, I know, something that's been on my mind recently is promotional processes and labor markets, what we're trying to do. I'm thinking more, we've talked about attracting new firefighters in the past on a couple of shows, but we're kind of in the process of starting to fill some openings with some staff movement.
Sure.
And so for decades, we had a process that we used. That was pretty static, pretty established, and we followed the 1970s recipe. civil service, typical written test, oral interview. I think scoring the resume maybe wasn't even done up front, but that worked its way into you looking at your experience or whatever. You develop your hiring list, your ranking for 2 years, away you go. Rinse, recycle, repeat.
Sure.
Even T-Mobile was on board with it. But as of late, we've been starting to re-examine whether or not those processes that we just accepted as being the only way you could ever possibly do a promotional process are selecting the candidates that we need or selecting the best person for the job either.
Right.
That sometimes it appears that a person can go through a process like that, achieve the top score, but very obviously not be your best candidate sometimes. And sometimes it works out the other way where no, things line up, but sometimes it doesn't. Or sometimes you select the person, then when they're in the position, you kind of go, wow, you've really been underwhelming. And so it starts to make you wonder, are we using the right tools to try to find the right people for the job? Have we even thought about what the skills and attributes are that we want people to have to be successful in that job? Or have we just been doing that? We follow the thing. We put in captains. We put in chiefs. And it's just all supposed to work without giving it much thought.
I think there's been a lot of pressure put on this lately that's starting to bring this to the surface, too. We're staring in the face a lot of retirements, a lot of people reaching retirement age. And in some communities, a fair amount of growth. In our area, we're facing a lot of growth, combined with quite a few retirements. So we're going into hiring phases that we've never seen before. We've never hired this many people before is what we're looking at in the next few years here. So you start to evaluate that. But on top of it, a job market where we're struggling to compete for people. We're used to being the fire department where we don't worry about recruitment. Like you said, we've done a few shows on that where we're the fire department. People come to us. Well, now we're having to go out to get people. So that's one piece of it. when we look at evaluating, getting people onboarded, is one, how long our process takes and how difficult that is. But now we're also starting to see people that are leaving that have been on the department. So now we talk about promotional processes, like you said, and that's even putting pressure on the promotional processes, and that, again, with the growth and the retirements, we're having to do more promotions more frequently. And we've had people that are leaving for, in some cases, other departments, but in some cases, they're leaving for other career opportunities outside the fire service. So, again, it's creating more pressure on both our hiring, but also our promotional systems, and forcing us to go, is what we're doing working, and is there a better way to do it?
Right. When I started in the early 90s in the career side of the fire service, it was a given that you got hired when you were somewhere in your 20s, and you put in somewhere between 30 and 40 years and retired somewhere in your mid to upper 50s, generally speaking, kind of around that range, because we all know your body starts to get pretty darn worn out for these kinds of duties. When you get to around that age range, which isn't, you're still not eligible for Social Security, but hopefully you've got other plans and stuff in place. And now we're seeing several folks that, well, the game plan is I'm trying to get to my 20. I'm trying to get to a point to where I have either vested with my retirement system in the state or the city county that I'm in, and or I've gotten to the point where I can draw back out some of the other accrued benefits. So say after 20 years, you're entitled to a certain payout on your accrued sick leave or accrued vacation that would be, you'd be leaving on the table if you leave earlier. And so we're starting to see people with around 10 years or so in the service, whether it's because they see other opportunities for a side business, or because maybe they aren't as committed to the organization. That's not the right word I want to use, but maybe they're not as
enthralled.
Yeah, they're not as motivated. They're not, you know. So you can say you can become disenfranchised if you say, well, gosh, I just don't know if the opportunities are there for me. I don't know if I'll get promoted. I don't know. I've seen some of those kinds of things happen where people pursue side businesses to try to find achievement or success. Oftentimes I think money is the secondary thing, but once it's there, it starts to provide opportunities to branch out or do different things. But people that are looking for creativity and growth and somewhere to channel their energies and their development or what have you. But you can see that some folks are saying, yeah, that 10-year mark, I might start exploring other options because, I'm not necessarily going to stay here that long. I might find another thing that's more lucrative, more personally rewarding, or doesn't have the same stresses or schedules or things for me. And so we're seeing that some of our folks that we thought would be really mobile are not and are preparing to drop out.
Some of that's good. Some of those are good trends. We used to see people stay on 40-plus years, and they're working into their 60s. And if they're on a truck, that's not necessarily where you want to see them. And I get it. You might love your career, but if you're doing it at the cost of your health or because you can't retire because of financial reasons, etc., that's not where you want to see somebody. Ideally, we want to see somebody have a happy, healthy career, and they retire and then have a good retirement life, whether that includes working again or whatever it is. But I think we are starting to see people are leaving younger. We're not seeing them stay 40 plus years anymore. They're leaving younger, and in some cases, if their plan was to work again, they're getting another job and they're double dipping and making more money, which again, that's to me, I look at that and go, that's a good thing. Because they're living probably a healthier lifestyle. Like you said, Jeff, it's not the wear and tear on the body, the 24-hour shifts, the tanking up, putting SCBA on, all that stuff.
Lack of sleep.
Yes, it's taking some of that out, and maybe they're getting a regular job, but they're making more money because they're collecting a pension, and then they're also collecting a paycheck if that's what they want to do or that's what's driving them. Or maybe they're just simply retiring and living the good life. But I think some of that's a good trend. So,
yeah, and you know, if you had a career expectation in your department of being around for, say, 30 years or 30 years plus, it's not necessarily an unusual thing to say, yeah, I'm going to be a firefighter for 10 years, and hopefully I'll get to be a captain. Yeah. And your systems are designed around that.
Right.
And then maybe I'll work as a captain for 10 years, and maybe I might have a shot at being a battalion chief or chief-level officer in my organization, depending. And if you've got people that are in and out in 20 years, what we've seen without planning for it. I think a lot of folks have seen because of turnover, and some folks have seen because of the reduced lifespan or the career span of folks, is it's entirely acceptable to start looking at 5 years in becoming a captain. And maybe 5 years after that, becoming a chief level officer. Or maybe it takes a little bit longer, but these time frames start to compress down because you have the need with turnover and workforce change that you can't, you don't have a large enough pool of people to choose from if everybody has to wait for 10 years before you're eligible for promotion. Otherwise, you don't have enough people to fill the spots. And so that also changes maybe what our testing and selection processes should be, and our top, and or a topic for another show, the training and preparation programs that departments and will have and individuals will be committing to be able to work on a time frame like that. And the nice thing is that at least the world is moving slower and technology is less prevalent. And so you don't need to know as much as you used to have to know. And it can take a lot longer time to develop those kinds of skills. So at least that helps.
But and I think in some ways, some of this, the outside influences are what are going to drive it. We talked a little bit earlier, and you kind of touched on it a minute ago, Jeff, was for even company officer level positions, do you go outside? And and traditionally we don't. I would say most fire organizations don't, whether you're big or small, you typically don't. And I think generally I think that's good, but you are seeing more and more organizations when you look at fire job postings, you're seeing more organizations that are going outside. But just like you said, some of that might be driven by you have too much turnover too fast.
Right.
You have a very young department or a very inexperienced department. You might have to start looking outside regardless of whether you want to or not.
What you are seeing some of when you're looking at fire service jobs is you are starting to see some battalion chief openings that simply weren't there 5 or 10 years ago. Unless you were in a very small or tight market, and you were advertising really locally for, they're trying to put somebody on, and maybe 5 or 6 departments in this smaller metro area are kind of working together. I mean, you didn't see that. And in the past, unless you were an explosively growing department or you had a real specialized need or division, you know, or maybe you're trying to hire prevention because it's a little bit harder to attract in prevention. You don't go to the outside, you know. But you're seeing that now. And there are some pressures and concerns that could trickle down to the captain's level too if you don't have enough. And it's not supposed to be about firefighter promotions tonight, but there's a lot of increasing pressure to look at lateral transfers or trying to attract people that are already in the career in other departments. There were lateral transfers that happened before that you'd grab somebody who had a couple years on one department and say they're trying to get back to their home area where they've got friends and family. You know, take your first career job you can find. Mm-hmm. Then you try to get to where you ultimately want to be. But you're starting to see open marketing to people that already have the job saying, you're already trained? Great, bypass the interview. Come on in. We'll look at experience up to so many years, and we'll slot you in on that pay grade and give you that level of vacation benefits and incentives. And those things weren't happening in the past either. Weird.
But so we kind of jumped a little bit all over here.
Yeah, I'm not even sure where we're going here.
Who's driving this bus?
Sure. I'd like to talk about European low-flow, high-pressure water streams now. I think they're really going to be innovative in the U.S. in the next 10 years.
So one of the questions we were talking about earlier is, with that company officer-level promotional process, we talked about inside, outside the organization, and so forth, but just right off the bat, most of us do a written test, and then some do an assessment center, some don't, some do. But usually there's a written test and an interview at least.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We've been talking about and looking at lately, do we change our written test? Do you get rid of your written test? Do you, again, looking at, just evaluating, is the process we've been using for the last how many years still applicable and effective? Or should we be looking at changing it? And if we do, what do we change? So being step one of the promotional process is typically the written test. Do you do a written test or don't you?
And that's obviously been a question that's come up for us, at least the last couple promotional tests. It currently still is the standard of how we do things. We talked earlier about you get a reading list. People study off of books, take a test, get a score, add it to your interview score, add it to assessment center if you do that score, and then you rank them. We do a little in our department. We have an eligibility list, is what I guess I would call it. After a while, so you add all these scores up, and then the top 15 or whatever are eligible, and we can actually pull technically from any one of those 15. So we've kind of opened it up a little bit. It's not the old way when I started, where it was like you were actually physically ranked 1, 2, 3. When there was an opening, they brought 3 people in, and they could choose from those 3. So now we've kind of broadened it a little bit. I'm not sure about the written tests because I'm not sure how much we give a lot of weight to it, but I don't know how much weight we really give to it when it comes to the decisions at the end. I think you know, obviously there's people that will argue that it's a minimum standard. You should have the aptitude to pass this test to show that you are proficient in these skills or whatever. And that's fine. We can come up with different ways of doing that, I think, if it's the assessment center or if it's certifications prior to taking the test.
Yeah, well, that's one question I had. Do you need to demonstrate that every 2 years or every time a process repeats again?
Right.
If you got a successful score once, do you need to restudy those materials and retake the test?
Right. Can you just
maintain that score?
Can you just ride that score for your career? Or I'm not sure. There's a lot of questions. You know, I'm new school and I'm an old school guy. You know, I have to do it this way. You're going to do it this way.
That's a good way to put it. But I'm kind of the same.
But I like new ideas. I like looking for certain candidates that have certain skills that we're looking for. The days of just being a good hose puller doesn't necessarily translate to being a good captain, because there's so many more skills that they have to have, mm-hmm. along with hose pulling.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they have to have those skills also, but they also have to have human relations skills, teaching skills, mentoring skills, those kind of things that have to come into play also.
Right.
So how do we find that candidate? And I'll be honest, in the department that we have, the current old school way of what I think of doing it, we're still getting the good candidates.
Yep.
You know, and we talk about, when you talk about promotions, you know, when you start out as a fireman, I'm just happy to be here as a fireman. And after 4 or 5 years, I'm like, okay, I think I can maybe do this captain job. And then you're fortunate or lucky to become a captain, and then you've 4, 5, 10 years from there, and like, oh, okay, this BC spot or AC spot is open. I'll go for that. But as we know, it's a triangle, right? So we have 80 guys at the bottom. There's one chief. So as we start working our way up, we're actually, you know, fortunately in a department I have, we get to choose from 4, 5, 6 good candidates for one spot. Well, what do the other 5, 6 guys do? They either hopefully get the next spot, or they take another test, or they look for other occupations. So, you know, and that's just the way. I mean, that's obviously in private business and government and all these other businesses. There's one CEO of the company that everyone wants to try to get to. But in the long run, in the route you take, people get left off that are actually good candidates.
Yeah.
So how do we satisfy our needs and satisfy the employees' needs? I'm not sure.
Yeah. Boy, that wasn't on the show notes. Oh,
yeah. No, I kind of went a little bit. That is.
You dug it. Went deep there.
Wow. That's way too many cheese and crackers there.
Yeah. All right.
So think about that for a little while.
Well,
put that on your show notes.
Well, I thought after the break you were going to give us the answer.
Yeah.
Stay tuned. Stay tuned. I'll tell you everything how it needs to be.
No, you got us on the edge of our seats. You can't just leave us hanging.
I do know that one thing that we are experimenting with, one thing we are going to try and see if it's successful, is the next round of captain's testing that we're going to be doing in our agency. We are going to rely on folks having completed fire instructor one or fire officer one certification,
sure,
as an eligibility requirement to be able to compete in the promotional process.
Yeah.
And so we're saying that if we want people to have a certain set, if we want them to have a series of informational points that are floating around up in their head, they should have gotten it by going through a standardized national curriculum. It's following a standardized textbook that has a standardized test that's been validated by an outside agency, And if they can successfully complete the written and the practical exams for our state certification and get IFSAC and ProBird certification, shouldn't that be good enough to say they've got the book knowledge, or at least they had it at one point in time?
Yeah.
So you're going to eliminate the written test by saying if you're certified in these four or five things that you've determined,
right,
and that you don't have to take the written test.
And yeah. that's a strong argument.
I'll go on record. I agree with that.
All right. It's hard to argue with.
Yeah.
The old school part of me likes the idea of having people work and study hard to learn the material to that higher level, but maybe that isn't necessary. Maybe that isn't that isn't making it better. Maybe it's just me going, well, I had to do it, so you should have to. And I don't think it is. I like the idea of people diving in the books and studying and learning about this career, because there's so much to this career, especially as it continues to evolve. There are so many specialty areas and so many knowledge, skills, and abilities in so many different areas that it's great to hit the books, I think, and study it. But like Jeff's saying, if you've reached these credentials, then you've proven you have the knowledge for these in these credentialed areas. Well, then let that speak for itself.
I really enjoy promotion time around the fire hall, because as the position I'm in, I get to walk around and I see people like in the books. They're in the bedroom. They're actually studying their things. But when you talk about written tests, I have a son that is a pretty strong student. That if I handed him 5 books and gave him 3 months to study for it, I would guarantee he'd be in the top 1 or 2 guys, in without any fire knowledge, because he can read the book and he can study the book. Does that make him a great fire captain? No, he'd be terrible. He needs an experience too, to come with it. So I like the credentialing part of it. I like the testing part of it, because you've already proven that you have the basic skills to do the job.
Yes.
And then, what's next? Now, what are we looking for next?
So we're hoping it covers the issue of liability is not the right word, but you're saying they've got a basic background knowledge. So you're not putting an unqualified person in that position.
Right.
So we've said you're qualified enough and meeting national standards too, not just our stuff. And how you get that happens outside of the promotional process. So for those people that the promotional process makes them nervous as heck,
Right.
Well, you are still testing, but you're testing as part of your class, post-class, or the end of that. And so it's not tied directly to your performance here either.
Right.
And then we are not taking the time or the effort to try to have that be part of our process. So what other institutional agency or energy can we take towards trying to evaluate other things on the candidate? And it turns the test into a pass-fail, actually, for the process, too.
Yeah.
They get scores when they're going through that, but when you get your certification, you've either passed or you haven't.
So
it does bring down, perhaps, the baseline, in a way, because all you know is somebody has passed.
Sure.
I just barely passed, or I got 90%. So it does take a little bit out of that, and does that make a difference in the end? But the problems that we've seemed to have had with people in positions hasn't necessarily been for a lack of background knowledge so much as it has been for bad communication skills, poor written communication skills, the inability to provide good customer service or to control yourself when you're out in the field under stressful conditions, or you've been on this is the 45th time we've been to this stupid building for fire alarms because you people are dumb.
Yeah.
And this is our job. It's been a lot of those human interaction, leadership, ethical questions, so things along there that you see more failures
plus,
on.
They have a tougher time with personnel issues and people and communications than anything else. Because, I guess I don't have scientific proof, but my gut says it's because from the day you were hired as a firefighter, you have trained to be a firefighter. So we train every year. Every year, every one of our personnel has to have 248 hours of training as a minimum. That's the minimum standard in fire and EMS and all these different areas. So we tend to get this is me personally, we tend to be good at the response side of things. The tougher side of thing is actually being the part where you lead people, you supervise people, you manage people, you do HR things yeah. with people. That's the tougher part because we don't train in that all day, every year since the day you were hired. That's where we tend to be weaker is because of that. And I remember this, every one of my promotions was day one of the promotion, you're nervous. Day one as a engine captain, you're going, oh, crap, don't give me the big thing. You know, just keep it small and so handle. And what you find out, and same thing with BC level, is the responses tend to go fine. Yeah. And that's not even because I'm so great. It's because I had good people working with me
yeah.
that helped me out. So, yeah, the firefighter, the driver, they took care of things. They made it happen. You kind of go, oh, we've got good people, know what they're doing. It was the other stuff that I wasn't sure about. When they come and they go, hey, my wife's having a baby. Is there some paperwork I got to fill out? And I'm like, yeah, I think so. Let's call HR.
Yeah.
It was the human resource personnel managing side of things. And so then when you look at that, when we're talking about promotional processes, how do you incorporate both, again, because the fire experience side is extremely important, with that other HR element.
So we've eliminated the written test. obviously, yes. There's an interview process.
It should be disappearing from the fire service within the next 6 months. Just wait till it comes to your locality.
Completely gone. So we've eliminated that. But then we also do an assessment center.
Yes.
So
yes.
What are we? Let's talk about that. What are we getting out of that?
Yeah, so, you know,
leading question.
Right, leading question. Yeah. So there you have the opportunity to demonstrate how you handle representative situations you'll face as a supervisor, assuming that the assessment center is designed well.
Yeah.
Assuming the measurement tools are designed properly, you know, and they follow real-world expectations and not, you know, theoretical ones that are crap, to be honest with you. And so, but that's an opportunity to actually try to get into how... Where are you at right now as a supervisor? If you had to handle this today, what would you do?
Right.
And there you can start to see distinctions and differentiations between people's experiences and or their personal philosophies. And you can see their attention to detail. You can see sometimes their knowledge of departmental policies or the ability to read through them first before taking action. Because a lot of times in those situations, you know, your policy manuals are provided as part of this. So if you need to look something up, please do. That's what you would do in
the job.
That's
what cut and paste is for.
And so
it's the assessment center.
You can find where some candidates who are doing really well, and then you also can find the areas where that person really is having some issues here that you may have expected or you may not have expected, but they do tend to come out in a pretty well designed process that don't come out necessarily with the oral interview or with the written test.
Sure.
There's some other things I'm sure we'll talk about the oral interview soon about what do you do in that process. But so far, I've only had one personal experience with running an assessment center. And I thought it was very instructive from our candidates of where they were at. We also did after actions, so to speak, with the candidates that were internal that applied in this process, try to see where are some areas that we saw that you had some weaknesses or some areas where you need some growth.
Yep.
And how can we focus our time and effort with you on the things you need? Because candidate A might need to work on different things than candidate C does.
Sure.
And so if done right, you could maybe use those to tailor continued professional development, because your goal is to try to have as many people well prepared for promotion as possible to fill the spots.
And the assessment center, most of people are aware of assessment centers now. It's kind of been the buzzword for the last 10, 15 years, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I took the first assessment center in Fargo Fire has ever done 10 years ago to become a battalion chief. It was a butt beater. It was a long day. Then I went home and wrote a paper that night while sipping on a beverage to try to get through the day. But involved in our assessment centers are those tactical things.
Mm-hmm.
We have a tactical portion. We have an HR portion. We have, you know, several different skills that we're testing in there that gives those individuals opportunity to shine and opportunity to maybe look for, like you said before, there's some skills they need to work on that we can help them later on after the process.
Mm-hmm.
I think the assessment center is good. Now, I've taken one and I've been involved in one. I've never built one. Like Craig has built them, and I'm sure that's not fun trying to put them together. but
they are not fun to build.
Logistically, they're a nightmare.
Yeah,
to get all the pieces together. But that's one of the pieces where a lot of this stuff takes a lot of work. And then that's where you look at, what do we get out of it?
Yeah.
Is it worth the work?
Right.
And the assessment center is one of those areas I believe is worth the work. It's a ton of work, but you get a lot of insight out of where everybody's at as far as their decision-making abilities. Like Jeff said, even their level of detail that they do things to. Yeah. Their background knowledge of whether it be SOGs or APs and department procedures, you get a really great look at where they're at and are they ready for this next step from that. So I'm a big fan of it, and I was talking just a few minutes ago about dealing with personnel issues and all that. That's a lot of stuff that can be wrapped into those in-basket exercises with the assessment center that then give you an idea of, yeah, they're ready for this with a little bit of coaching and some resources. They're going to do great.
So we had, I think it was, we're in the 25 people took the last promotional test to be a captain. A lot of work. What does a large department do? You know, say, I'll go all the way to the FDNY. Could they run an assessment center?
Do you know somebody you can call?
And pull it off. I know. I mean, I'm just wondering, could they pull it off? Because that's a lot of work.
I have to imagine a regionalized concept.
So that's
concept.
why some of these larger places stay in the old school.
Well, sure.
Written test to narrow down.
Logistically,
that's exactly,
yeah.
You know, right. What maybe, the written test is designed to do is to narrow down your applicant pool to a small enough group of people that you can then more thoroughly assess.
Because I'm guessing, I'm not just guessing, I don't know, but FDNY probably has hundreds of people that take a promotional test every...
Could be thousands. I don't know.
Could be thousands, yeah. I don't know, but how do you narrow it down? And like I say, I've seen the number one candidate in our department get promoted and be a terrible captain. So if you look at an FDNY, you know, your best candidate could be at 150. I don't know, you know. So obviously they got to narrow things down. And I understand why they do those things like that. But when you have a mid-sized department or smaller department, I think it's a good idea to start looking at those assessments.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
along with, you know, obviously the FDNY chief or whatever positions they have that score those promotions, they're not going to interview 600 people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It would
that'd
take
be a
2 years to get
it'd be a waste of time. You know, I mean, it would be right. Unacceptable. But
when we developed our battalion chief's assessment center, it also ended up being pretty critical to interface with some people outside of our department to make sure we were on base. We did that by working with a neighboring fire department a little bit to bounce some ideas off to see if we were on track and actually checking to see what had they done in their last assessment center. So we had some concepts. We built a couple of things out. We looked to see at examples from another department's process to see if we were on the right track. And then surprisingly enough, we ran the idea past our HR department. We told them what we were doing because actually fire departments, if they're large enough in career departments, you just do your own thing.
Right.
You know, and yeah, you got to talk to HR eventually about some stuff, but you know, you just let them know what you're doing. But we let our HR know what we were doing, and they were intrigued by that and wanted to know if they could see what we'd put together because they hadn't done a lot of work with assessment centers.
Sure.
And so we brought one person from HR in, and okay. And then that person started asking us a few questions about what we had put together, which was frustrating at first. But then as you started to realize that the questions led to a better answer in the end or a better design scenario in the end, or our measurement criteria were off. Too many points or too few points or not actually evaluating the right thing. And then coming to find out that a couple of our assessment center items were actually measuring the same thing, just it was a different scenario.
Yeah,
but there's like, this is a common scenario in the fire service. So is that. Yeah, but what are you measuring the candidate's ability
it
to
actually
do?
It gets the same result, yeah.
And realized, we can streamline a little bit about what we're doing and suggested a couple areas that we hadn't thought of that were really important that do happen. And so I would also highly suggest if you're developing your own to work with people who have developed one before, but also involve an outside perspective.
Right.
If you've got somebody good in HR, whether it's in your department, your city, or a neighboring one, somebody who's got some experience with assessing instruments, and maybe it's also somebody at your local college instead of HR, but somebody who knows some of the finer points about doing more complex exams. So you might not get that in secondary schools, but folks who are doing essays and projects that they're grading can start to bring some insights about, don't do this. It's going to take you 6 hours to score an exercise like that. Change it slightly to where there are these 5 or 6 points in here that you have to hit, and you won't be pulling your hair out on a Thursday.
That's a good point.
Night.
You know, we're typical fire service that, I know how to do an assessment center. This is what I want. You know, that's not my forte. I pull hose, remember? Right? You know? So it's good to bring outside people in to take a look at that. And also include them in your panel.
Yeah.
I think. Because otherwise, you can get the biased, a little biased actions going on if you don't bring someone from the outside in. And we do a good job of that. We bring someone from HR, someone from another department, a diverse panel. You know, I think those are important too, to see what we're really looking for. And it's interesting to see, when you have a diverse panel, how people score differently. I really noticed that the last, even the entrance exam was a little different. So bring that stuff in and gather more information. Don't do it by yourself. Really look for outside sources.
Right, and if you're doing it in any type of a live setting where you're scoring, or if you sit back down and then review what you put together before you finalize or make aggregate scores, then you'd also get to hear different perspectives by somebody either not in the fire service or doesn't know your candidates, that will sometimes challenge your opinions or your reflections on them or bring up points that you might have missed, and are usually pretty constructive to have in there if you can approach it with an open mind. Not to say you just have to buy into everything they say, because you still might disagree with things, but there are times where you get a slightly different light on a candidate that you didn't expect, and the process is better in the end because of that.
So we're working our way through this promotional process. I think we got it figured out. We got rid of the written test.
Yep, that's gone.
We're big on the assessment center test.
It's in. It's on.
It's on. I think if done correctly,
right,
it's in. So our next step is obviously oral interview.
Yes, it has to be.
What does those things look like? I mean, I've been on both sides. You know, obviously most people listening probably will be on both sides. And we've all been sitting around the table, been on both sides of this process. But
I can speak from being the horrible interviewee perspective. I'm good at that.
Yeah.
So are you going to or not? Like, speak on it as the oral interviewee.
Yeah, we're not interviewing you.
I think
you
know, he's still shell-shocked from
he's
the process.
Up.
Yeah. Yeah. He's in the middle of it right now. You only have 30 seconds to give us your answer.
True.
Obviously there's people who have different skills.
I
love interviews because it gives me an opportunity to get my opinion out, my voice out.
Yep.
You just told me you don't like oral interviews.
No, I'm just saying I traditionally in the past have been horrible at them, especially when I was younger. I do believe it's one of those you get better with every time you
Absolutely.
Do one.
Yeah.
So it's definitely a practice skill. But I think a lot of the interview goes into the questions that are asked.
Yeah.
And that is very difficult to come up with questions that are worthwhile to ask, especially in a promotional interview. I think in a new hire interview, I want to get to know the candidate. I want to get to know their background. I want to get to know some of those things. And not that you don't want to know that with a promotional candidate, but in our size organization, you kind of have that background already with the candidate, and you can cover that pretty quickly in one or two questions. It's how do you get the information you really want, and what is the information you really want, I think are the more difficult pieces. And you and I have spoken with people in the corporate world to try and get ideas.
Yeah.
What types of questions should we be asking? And some of those have helped, I believe, and we're using some of them.
Yeah.
But it's complex.
It's very complex, and like Craig mentioned, it's been a while now, but we're looking for how to interview and how to get the right candidates for entrance exams and promotional exams. So we're just BSing and talking and kicking around ideas, and there's a company out in town here that has been voted like the best place to work for like the last 5 years. Well, we're like, well, why don't we just call them up?
Yeah.
You know, and you don't be afraid to do that because they're companies are willing to visit because they want to pick your brain too a little bit about, you know, our side of the world a little bit. But we called them up and we ended up meeting a guy for coffee and we were talking and he gave us some great pointers. You know, obviously they might be looking for something a little different than we are, but he kind of gave us reasons behind why they ask these certain questions. And we've actually used some of those questions right now in our entrance exam, at least in the second interview type process. We ask those questions. Really gets a good insight on the individual. And to see if they match up with, you know, I know we're kind of bouncing back and forth between promotions and entrance, but an entrance we look for, I've always said this, you need to be a good fit for us, and we need to be a good fit for you. Because we want you around for 30 years, you know, if we can. Mm-hmm. That's the candidates we're looking for that want to be there. So, but as far as promotions, same thing. You look for those certain questions that can maybe push it.
Right.
So now, some departments will just have like a chief interview with the candidates. Some departments will have promotional candidates. Some people will have a panel with them, you know. What do you guys do?
I can speak to the last battalion chief's process. So we did two separate interviews. The first interview was a panel interview, and we were trying to do exactly what you had described, trying to find out what are the soft skills that can't be measured as effectively with the assessment center with a written test that we think are important. So attitude, customer service, focus and orientation, teamwork, comfort with working with individuals of other, you know, personalities and so forth. And then we looked at previous questions that other, you know, go on the internet, do a search for Italian chief questions. And we found a lot of those to be a little underwhelming, but the kinds that we would have been using in the past, you know.
You throw a couple of those in there.
Captain so-and-so responds to a call, and while inside the private residence, firefighter so-and-so observes Captain taking something out of the nightstand. How do you handle this as a battalion chief? Is that? Yes, I get it. There's a question about ethics.
You got to ask that.
What I'm more interested in to find out that, are you a person who is going to treat customers well? Are you a person who feels internally motivated to help develop the people underneath you as a captain or as a BC? I guess I was talking BC to begin with.
Sure.
So what kinds of questions will drive answers to help you explore how they truly feel about that? And our HR got us some third-party materials about here are different attributes that a supervisor or manager that might fit in with your organization. If so, a list of potential questions to go along with them, which was sort of like some things you can find on the internet, but it was very corporate world focused. But actually, a lot of them kind of got us out of our mindset because they weren't fire service specific, and some of them got to just you in a business or you working for a company, like a fire service company, how do you feel? So that first interview, we really redesigned almost all of our questions because they were all very fire service. And a lot of times we were asking the same things that we would get from the assessment center. So we're acting, what would you do in this tactical situation? Well, we actually run a fire tactics simulation, and we have you run it as an incident commander. We don't need to ask that question anymore.
Yeah.
So the first round did that. And then we had a second round that with the chief and the deputy chief, where the focus of that interview was to find out with the candidate, do you personally identify, or can you go along with the direction that the department is going in the future? So here are the plan goals for the organization over the next 5 to 10 years. Here's where we see things going.
Wow.
Here are the things we think are going to be important in the next 2 to 5 years for challenges for our personnel and staff. So then we got into philosophies of the organization and the current leadership, and to see if, sort of like that new firefighter, are you a good fit for us? Are we a good fit for you with what you're looking for? Or are you going to come in and are we going to butt heads with each other on a lot of these things? So then it's the first time we really looked at a second interview, if we were doing one, to say what would be more important here that you couldn't get it elsewhere that you want to evaluate. And it actually comes down to, if you have your top finalists, are you a good fit? So we figured out, what does the department need right now? And usually it's identifying the leadership gap that we have right now. And if you've got other supervisors, this one's strong on this, this one's strong on this, where are we missing something? We need more empathy. Right. We need more person who's more of a problem-solving person or something like that to help balance out our leadership team. And then where's the department going with their philosophy? And so the idea of customizing questions for what chief-level officer do we need right now, today, to help balance out the team. That was like crazy talk because everybody's got to fit the same cookie cutter.
Yeah. That's a whole other discussion because do you short someone because they have matching skills or don't, you know?
It depends on it depends qualified, what you find in the process too because you don't.
But in business world and in private sector, of course they're going to do that. They're looking to complete the team, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that.
But it is also one tool that's used in combination with everything else leading up to that. So we know that they've already got the training in the background, so that part isn't a question. And we saw they performed their performance assessment, you know, for all their skills. So we see their strengths and weaknesses, which doesn't necessarily qualify or disqualify anybody in and of itself, unless you need to narrow the pool to go to the next process.
Right.
And then you see what the previous interview was. And so it's not as if, great, you got to there, everything is out. Now tell me if you're going to tell me I'm a good chief. You know, it's not about that, but it's actually then bringing those tools in and then bringing that last piece to see, all right, now how do I feel putting them all together in a very specialized scientific formula that we have put together.
Do you find during the oral interview process for promotions that the candidates say the same things?
I found if the questions are truly getting at a person's nature and are not just superficial, then yes.
Yep.
But if the questions are pretty superficial, where the answer is pretty obvious, so I need to give an answer like this, then you tend to get more of the same answer.
The canned answer.
Then the question isn't really that useful. It was a waste of both of our time. If you know the obvious answer, and so that's also some of those entry-level firefighter questions. Some of them are so obvious. Well, don't ask that one. Ask something else.
Why do you want to be a firefighter? Help people. I've heard that 100 times, you know, which is a great, is that truly a great answer, but it's canned, you know, and it's the same thing. But so, yeah, I like trying to find the core values of people. And can you do that? And it's tough.
It is.
It's very tough, but truly that's how they're going to act out on the street is if they have those core values you're looking for as a department or an organization. It's difficult to find those questions sometimes. You know how it is. It's some people have test anxiety. Some people have interview anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Some people, it's their first interview. Some people, it's their 12th interview.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it all depends on what you're looking for.
Sometimes
it works, but, you know, I always ask my grandpa, how did you get promoted? He goes, just be good at the job you're doing. And that he's right. That's an old school answer. But he's right, you know. So how do we balance what we need here? We need, obviously, you want your fire captains to have strong firefighting skills, good decision making skills in emergency situations. As you move up, you still got to maintain those skills. Now you got to add more skills to it. And how do you do those things? And I think we're all on the same page. As you know, it's mentorship. Those things are helping. Individuals from the very beginning, if you can hit them from day one, I think that's pretty good. So, all right, so I think we've got it figured out, right? I think we can write it down. We're getting rid of the radio or the written test, radio system.
Don't call me radio.
Get rid of those radio systems too, but get rid of the written test. We're going to go full on in on the assessment center, and then we're going to do the oral interviews. And then finally, the chief's is going to decide.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Throw it all out and I'll pick one.
You said it earlier. That's an exciting time when you're doing promotions, and I like it. I love being involved with it. It is an exciting time, but I also love the part where you get to hand it off to the chief to make the final decision.
Because
that's a tough, tough deal.
It is.
Because you are impacting people's lives, and you. A lot of times we have more good candidates than we have positions.
Yeah.
And so that's one piece of the chief's job that I give him all the credit for, that he does that and steps up to do that, because I'm glad I don't have to.
But I've always said, you know, as a battalion chief, we in the current process we have, we go around the room and talk about it. And sooner or later, I have to give a name. And there are nights where I haven't slept before that, knowing that.
Yep.
Because we are, you know, one, you're changing people's lives. Two, you're setting the organization in a certain direction. And I have sleepless nights, and that's at a battalion chief level.
Yes.
So I'm just one of in my department. There's six of us. I'm just 1/6 of the vote. You know, to be honest with you, and then it moves. They get all added up, and it moves forward to the chief of the department, and he has the final say in that. So I don't know if there's a kind of wrap this up. I don't know if there's a perfect system out there. I think you have to kind of design on what you find is best for your department,
mm-hmm.
and what you can, if you feel like you are getting the best candidates for those promotional positions. And if you're not, if you feel you're not, then maybe you should look at changing a few things. And I think we always are looking at things.
Yeah.
If it's eliminating the written test or putting more emphasis on the written test.
Or just changing it. I guess that's probably the biggest point. Just like you said, is that we're evaluating it every time we're doing it. Should we change something? Because that's the other thing, is we don't need to change it drastically.
No.
We tend to sometimes think we got to change everything all at once. A little step one direction, I think, is a good change. And that's one of the things we were looking at for our next round, is just moving from a paper test to doing it on the computer. That's it. It's not
what?
Not anything major, but okay, let's open that door, walk through it, see how it works, and then potentially down the road, 10, 15 years, maybe people can do the written test from home on their computer. I don't know. But it opens up the door to more possibilities in the future if we want to go that route. But for right now, it's just a little step in a direction moving forward.
And the only advice I would have is you know, make changes, make them small, you know, look for it. But I can tell you that majority of the time, the cream will rise to the top, no matter what you do.
Mm-hmm.
They will adapt, and they will figure it out and come to the top. So don't be scared to make a few adjustments, I think, is the biggest thing. Your top candidates will always be your top candidates.
I think it's important also to send that message out to the candidates, the folks that are in the process, because it is stressful for them when systems change or they're going to be different. But those folks that are really well prepared should do well in a lot of different
ways. They've got the skills. They have the skills, and they'll be there at the end. So don't be afraid you're going to, you know, eliminate your top guys either.
Sure. Well, what we're anxious to try out in a couple of years, I guess the programming isn't ready yet, but doing the testing of our applicants in their sleep using those chips that have all been implanted with the vaccines. So we don't even have to do this stuff, and we'll just get the automatic results.
Jeff.
Oh, okay. Well, that's maybe a topic for another show. We can solve that problem later. But sure,
you told me not to be political.
I'm just talking facts. This is not politics. So,
Well, we've enjoyed our last show.
Yeah, it was great while it lasted.
No, I think there's good processes out there. I think everyone needs, like I said, what works best for your department, your size, your needs, those things. So I just challenge departments out there and people out there to look at different ideas. I'm a big seek information from the outside of the fire service. Doesn't mean you need to take it, but just listen to these private corporations, successful corporations, large corporations. I mean, some of these guys have got to figure it out. Mm-hmm. So listen to them and see what they do and take a little bit of it and incorporate it into yours. And don't be a 1970s fire department sometimes. We have to look at it. We've talked, you've heard probably 100 radio shows and obviously every news channel about society's changing and people are changing and generations are changing. So how do we find that candidate that's going to be the next, might get promoted to captain and might be the next chief in 20 years from now or whatever. So
there you go. Now that we've fixed this, we can move on to politics and religion.
Yeah, I got some politics stuff. One show I'd like to do someday, and I'd like to argue about knowledge, skills, and abilities. I get a little angst when they talk about those KSAs. That's something maybe we could talk about some other
time. Nice. What would you like to talk about one day, Craig?
I like food.
Oh, yeah. Foodie?
Is this the wrong show for that?
No, I think we're...
Oh, okay.
That's the only reason I'm here.
We did one episode in the past from the frying pan. We did that live, so you had some plates clinking in the background and some silverware. That was kind of cool.
Yeah,
we don't have any silverware here while we're eating the pre-cut up sausages and cheese and crackers and stuff, but it works. Yeah, and we've never done the live from the local drinking establishment show. Or, well, I was going to say, we haven't done live by the lake or on the lake.
Yes, Dane and I did one once.
You might have done one, the two of you without me, when I was
once, yeah.
You weren't invited to the fun spot?
No, Jeff didn't
show. Well, they wanted to have fun, so they knew.
Yeah, don't invite Jeff.
Better or not, Jeff. Yeah, well, if we can line up one to go to do a show at the circus.
I'm willing to do a show anywhere, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm. Take it on the road.
Some places will be better than others.
Oh, this time of year, we should have been doing a show from Florida or Hawaii or
Caribbean,
something like that.
We need to. Do you guys have any money, budget, or anything?
Maybe we can
expense it all.
Maybe we can get Fire Engineering to spring the bill for a trip. We'll see.
That's a great idea.
Story I want to talk about next show.
I have wanted to explore on the air, get guests in the studio, the mobile studio we'd bring with us, about the differences in U.S. and Caribbean firefighting.
Absolutely.
I'm completely enthralled by that, and I think the entire country could benefit from what we would discover by spending a significant amount of time researching that, and possibly researching the differences from one Caribbean island to another.
It would benefit everyone.
Absolutely.
Everyone.
Well, how different it is to fight a fire on an island versus the mainland.
Absolutely. What do you do?
I'm living on an island every day, brother, so talk to me.
Yeah, we meant to talk to you about that.
All right. Well, that's probably good for off the air. So as we sign off, we'll continue the discussion offline on this. Hang in there. Stay safe. We'll see you in the next episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio, if I can get that out of my mouth.
Everybody, have a good one.
Yep, see you. Have a good night. Be safe.
Thank you for listening to Tailboard Talk. Don't forget to tune in each week, Monday through Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern, 8:30 p.m. Pacific, for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. You can also subscribe to all of our shows on iTunes. Just search for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Check out our educational programs and consultation services. They're all available at tailboardconsulting.com. There you can find links to all of our shows and our magazine articles. Thanks for listening, and join us again next month for another episode of Tailboard Talk on Fire Engineering Talk Radio.